Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Chris Evans here, and welcome once again to the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast with Sky from Virgin Radio. Coming up, the one and only Fern Cotton telling us all about her brand new Happy Place app. Virgin Radio's very own Graham Norton takes us through his brand new novel, Forever Home, his fourth, another bestseller for sure. And Son of Beetle, Julian Lennon chats his brilliant new single, Lucky Ones, and his new album, Jude, plus why he's changed his name by Deed Poll, and so much more else. Lovely chat with Julian. Huge intro now, please, from Vassos Alexander.
You will know our next guest from your radio and your telly and your bookshelf and your favourite podcast and the Tesco ad. And now from your local friendly app store. The new Happy Place app is available now. When it comes to wellness, we still have lots to learn. So we yearn for the return of Fern.
Oh, yeah.
I like that.
Just about got there, Vassos.
Just about.
No, congratulations on everything. By the way, he missed out your festivals there.
The festivals,
doesn't
yeah.
matter. But congratulations most of all, as Vass alluded to there, the Tesco ad. It's awesome.
It's relentless, isn't it?
It's good, though. It's a good one. Yeah. When did you get that call? How does that work?
What, for Tesco?
Did you get an audition or...
No, I didn't get...
Do you have a separate agent for your voiceovers?
No. Same. But I love doing voiceovers.
Yeah, I used to love them.
Yeah.
Don't get them anymore. I could have the name and number of your agent, please. That'd be
pass
great.
It on.
Thank you very much indeed. So the Happy Place app now. You know when somebody's big and successful because they've had a book out, right? But then you go to like Foyles on Tottenham Court Road. She's got her own section.
What, have I?
Yeah, you have got your own section, yeah.
Oh, I might pop there on the way home.
It's really... I would if I were you.
I'm so excited.
If that were me, I'd set up camp in front of my own... You've got your own shelf.
I had no clue. My local bookshop sometimes has my books, sometimes doesn't, and I feel a bit put out about that.
Yeah, but well, you shouldn't be put out by that, right? Because here's the thing. My local bookshop always has my books. Yours sometimes has your books and sometimes doesn't, which means they sell.
Oh, well, true.
you don't want them always.
You made a good point. Good counter-argument.
They're still there. Yeah. How come my books are there? Because we've sold them all. We've reordered some new ones.
That's great. Yeah. Okay. I've
stopped going in. It's just not...
Our local bookshop, Caroline, went in and said, Vassos Alexander's written books about running in barns and wearing his barns. Should you stock his books? And they went, nah, you're all right.
Thanks a lot.
That's not very nice.
Yeah. So 8 books and counting. The Happy Place podcast launched in 2018, doing great business. You've got your own publishing thing going on now as well.
Yeah, so we have a book imprint with Ebree. So we have Happy Place Books. So we're sort of continuing the theme of the podcast and the other work we're doing. And publishing beautiful books with great storytelling, lesson learning, advice. Some are expert-led, some are more sort of anecdotal and personal, but that's been a wonderful process.
Well, we have Craig David on the show next Wednesday, and he's written a book
on
and he's
our
on
imprint.
To talk about his book, and he's going to sing some songs, but it's one of your books.
Yeah, it's a Happy Place book. Yeah, we've been talking to Craig about this for years, so we're glad that after sort of it being an initial conversation, the book exists and it's really good.
So the Happy Place empire, because it is an empire, and it's, by the way, it's cool, it's fine to have an empire, of course it is, because it's a useful one, you know. And did you always have a route map for how it was going to start? What was the first Happy Place product? Was that the book?
Yeah, it was the book Happy. And I mean, I had no plans to do anything.
So Happy was the first one.
Yeah.
When did you think Happy Place?
Probably a couple of books in, where I was like, oh, actually, people are really interested in this subject.
Right.
And it felt like a conversation rather than... I wasn't imparting any wisdom. I was just sort of talking about my own experiences.
But you were, though, Fern. Stop
talking. I don't know.
No, you can't say that. You can't say that because you absolutely were.
I mean, I've gained some. I've talked to some very interesting people.
Yeah.
But I think a little way down the line, we thought a podcast could be cool because I wasn't really doing radio at that point, and it felt like a nice, organic place to end up in, and I love interviewing people.
Right.
So we started the podcast, and that was just fun.
So it was the book Happy.
Yeah, then
couple
Happy
of books
Place
in.
Was the podcast.
Happy Place was the podcast. So the first time we heard Happy Place was the podcast.
Yeah, and then we were like, oh, this is... this could be a thing.
Right.
And we just then started taking lots of chances. And some have worked and some haven't.
But that's the way it is.
But that's the way it goes. And it's been an amazing adventure. I'm still on it, clearly, but it's been brilliant.
Okay, so when was the festival next?
Probably the festival. We experimented with a few different projects. We had a music project at one point. We had an album. So we worked with different artists to create sort of music that talked about mental health. So
but
that
do you have
was
a team?
Early
then? How does it work?
Yeah. We have an amazing team who all have very bespoke jobs. And we all cross-pollinate and bring our ideas together. And that then ended up being the festival. That was the first big kind of let's bring everyone together to do an event where we hopefully really offer lots of people helpful, resourceful advice and tools for a very low price point. And that's, you know, that's this summer, it went brilliantly. We're so proud of it. It was amazing.
And what about, so the next thing is the app.
Yeah.
So how does the app work? What is it? How do people get it?
So the app has sort of collated everything that I've learned over the years with all the different brilliant experts that I've not only spoken to but have befriended. I'd say 80% of the practitioners on the app are just mates of mine that have luckily said yes to being part of this project. So all the tools that I've used are lots of things that I know you're very interested in as well that have genuinely helped me reduce stress, sleep better because I haven't been a great sleeper historically, have helped get me back in the moment rather than racing ahead. They're all very different practices. There's everything from meditation, yoga, tapping, yoga nidra, sleep stories. There's articles on all of these things as well. But there's a lot of sessions that you partake in, either voice-led or some are video-led. And it's a one-stop shop for all of that. And there should be something that floats your boat because there's a lot of different practices on there.
Yeah, and that's a big deal, isn't it? Because you've got to, if people buy into this, which they can, I know it's that you can go on a 14-day free trial, we'll get to that in a second or two. So who doesn't want that for 14 days for free? That's great. You know, that is a no-lose situation. Oh. That is a win-win and a nothing-but-win situation because you can cancel your subscription after that if it doesn't work for you. But with that comes great industry, doesn't it? So you have to now come up with all this stuff. So what is the weight of that? Like, how does that look?
Well, that is the exciting bit for me because we've launched with sort of, I see it as phase one of what this app is. So right. Here are some really brilliant practitioners, I believe the best out there, like the breathwork expert. I think you've had Rebecca Dennis on the show before.
We've had lots of breath people on. She is one of them.
Yeah. So Rebecca sort of heads up that section of the app at the moment. And then Poppy Delbridge does the tapping and there's meditation from my friend Jambo and Giselle Lapont Moore. Like they're top of their game. But I think we could go off in so many different directions in terms of practical help for people. And I've got lots of ideas for where we take that. Because this has got to be a sustainable project. We've got to keep this rolling for years.
Yeah.
So, and the lucky thing is I meet new interesting people every day in the work that I do. So it's now just a chance to work with them more closely and get their expertise out to the masses.
Yeah. The Happy Place app available now on iOS from the Happy Place website and the App Store. Fern, you're always welcome.
Thank you, Chris.
Don't leave me so long next time.
I won't.
Don't be a stranger.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
You're listening to Virgin Radio. Chris Evans at breakfast, Graham Norton at the weekend. Oh, hang on, he's right here now to Graham's guide us through the pages of his new blockbuster Forever Home out now. Whether it's the telly, the radio or the bestseller charts, he is the antidote to boredom. It's Graham Norton.
All right, Graham.
Thank you very much.
Now, the last
indeed.
Time you came and did something similar to this conversation-wise on this show, you bagged the job here.
I know.
So what's going to happen?
I'm going to get fired today. Are you getting me cancelled today?
I doubt it. Anything could happen in the next half an hour. Right, I haven't read your book, right?
And of course, okay. Novels you don't do.
I don't do novels. I apologise. Yep. I try, but it would be a worse conversation for it if I just tried to sort of,
And also, I feel like if there was a Venn diagram of someone who wouldn't like this book, it's probably you.
Oh, hang on a minute. I'm not saying I wouldn't like it. I was trying to talk about novels before, wasn't I, generally? And I even messed that up, didn't I, Rachel?
Yeah, you said that you weren't into plots.
No, I didn't say that it was worse. Thank you for making it sound better than it actually turned out to be.
So, what did you actually say?
So I just can't remember. It's a long show, Graham.
Here's the thing. Yes. Novels, I think, because even when you're writing them, I, so when I was writing this, you... begin to lose faith in your silly book because the world is in a state of chaos, and you're thinking, I should be writing, you know, some sort of state of the nation thing, or I should be writing, you know, a book about something. But then you come back to stories, and I think, you know, we told stories around the fires, you know, when we're living in caves, and I think we'll be telling stories to each other as we, you know, file off to Armageddon. So I think stories are so important. Yeah. And they're kind of at the root of everything that you and I do, stories.
Totally. And, you know, and if you want to, George Clooney says, you know, if you want to get your point across, tell a story, because it's the best way, of course, especially if it's filled with humour, even about the darkest subjects. Look at Charlie Chaplin, The Great Dictator. We always talk about that in 1939, what an effect that had.
For this is a long show. Wow.
The betterment on the world. I know. But listen to this. Forever Home, Graham Norton, his fourth novel. If you carry on like this, you will have written more than I've read. I mean, we're not far off, it has to be said. Do you want to frame it and then we'll get Rachel to talk about it?
What do I want to do?
Frame what goes on in this.
Oh, frame it?
Yeah.
Okay, it's about a divorced woman, Carol. She's older, she's in her late 40s, and she finds love for the second time with an older man called Declan, and his wife had left him, so he's got adult children, and she's got an adult son, and that's great. They found love. Wonderful. But he gets ill, and his kids spend no time in getting him out of the house into a home and turfing her out of the house. Her parents, Moira and Dave, my favourite characters in the book.
Oh, Moira Crotty is a goddess.
And she decides to right a wrong, like a moral warrior, and in doing so, stirs up a whole mess of trouble, plot thickens, drama ensues, the end.
Love it. Okay. And it's interesting that you there allude to your favourite characters in the book. So if you have a favourite character, do they get the line? Like of your attention while you're writing then?
I mean, sort of. What Moira did was Moira brought the funny. I wasn't expecting this book to be funny, but Moira, she's in her late 80s. She's a particular sort of Irish mother. She shows her love by doing rather than saying.
And inspired by anyone in particular?
No, I don't know what you mean, Chris Evans. My mother hasn't read it yet, so we'll see. We'll see what she thinks of it.
I'm on every page,
but I say this,
Rachel.
Moira was my favourite character, and even just there's because you deal with some really big issues, especially Declan's illness.
Yeah,
which you write about beautifully.
Oh, thank you.
But then there's the hilarity of Moira, and even describe their house. The house that they've bought because they're so successful with their cafes, but how they furnish it.
Yeah, so they're one of the... And you know these people. So they go big on the house and they buy this sort of architect-designed glass box Malibu beach house that's been built in West Cork. But, of course, they furnish it with their furniture. So it's got, like, pine dressers and overstuffed chintz sofas, and they put carpet over all the lovely wooden floors. And it's not for
inspired
them.
Inspired by anyone, Graham?
No, actually, well, I mean, I have seen houses like that, but that's not my mother. My mother does not live in a Malibu beach house. I mean, she would if she allowed me to put her in one.
See, now that's from a cinematographic point of view. Or from a cinemagenic point of view, that would play well in a movie. Do you always have a screenplay in mind when you do?
No, not at all. It's weird because you think, you know, because the first one, Holding, did become a TV show. So you think, oh, in my head, I've been out. But when you're in the book, you're in the book. Like, I don't even go as far as to think about the audiobook, which Gubbins here, I'm going to do that. Yeah. And I don't even think so. I'll do the audiobook and I'll be turning pages going, oh my God, they talk. Oh no, this person has an accent. Oh no. And you think when I'm writing it, I would be thinking that far ahead, but I'm not.
Because you're in the moment, which
you're
is
in
great.
The moment, yeah.
Because you work for Audible as well, don't you?
I do, yeah. I do a book club for
book
them.
Book club. So this is an In Your Ears book club.
Yeah, it's In Your Ears book club, and we have actual clubbers who are there. That's my favourite bit. We have people up and down the land. And we get a panel of them together. And, you know, presumably the authors do hear this because I interview the author separately. And then I go to the covers, we talk about the book, and some weeks.
Tell us about that.
They get a drubbing.
Yeah.
Some of the books,
they know about it? Is this post the reviews then?
It's post the interview. So they've heard the interview with the author. And actually, often the interview with the author will soften their reviews, right, because they like the sound of the author.
Fair enough.
But sometimes the books, they know like
it. And it's hard to stay angry. they say that, don't they, about anger? You have to get up and be... You have to remind yourself you're angry about something, which is why they say time is a great healer. Because people just can't be bothered to be that angry for that long.
Yeah, it's true.
Graham, lovely to see you again.
Oh, take care.
You're the best. Graham Norton, Virgin Radio's very own Graham Norton, talking about his brand new book, Forever Home. And he's appearing live over the next few days. An evening with Graham Norton, Cardiff New Theatre, Bath the Pavilion on the 10th, 16th, Guildford, October the 17th, Chester, 18th, Edinburgh, 22nd, London, and Tunbridge Wells on the 23rd.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
He is the inspiration for three of the greatest songs of all time. His dad was a Beatle, and luckily for the rest of us, he is every bit as talented as you'd hope. He's a photographer, an author, and his first album for 10 years, Jude, is out now. Of course it's No Lemon, because he's Julian Lennon!
Morning, Jules!
Good.
How are we?
I'm alive.
Second time we've met this morning.
Indeed. You can tell the story.
Just before the interview, just went for a comfort break.
Yes.
A comfort break, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Okay.
And installed myself, up to one of the urinals. And you know when you sense somebody else is next to you? And so you sometimes look, sometimes
I did,
you don't.
I did try and stay as far away from you as possible.
And it was good. So we warmed up this evening by having a pee together.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the way to wake up, isn't it?
Yeah. And I wash my hands.
Me too.
Good. Excellent. Yes. Perfect. How are you?
Alive. I call it life lagged these days.
Tell me
not
about
jet
that.
Lagged.
Come
life
on, tell
lagged.
Me about life lag.
Well, you know, this is even just this past week. I've been doing promo for the album for several months now via Zoom and all of that kind of stuff. I've been based in LA over the last month, doing a lot of work out of there for the US. And it was literally a week or so ago. They said, "All right, you're going to London for a week." And I went, "What? Hey, who? What? When?" Yeah, just in and out, flying in Saturday, flying out Saturday, and you have no life in between. I said, "Okay, thank you." Anyway, it's been great, actually, you know, because I'm quite resistant with many things. And I just thought, why can't we do this on Zoom? But I have to say, meeting people and having conversations face to face, there's no better way.
Yeah.
Absolutely no better way.
And we're all more grateful than we've ever been within our lifetimes as well.
Absolutely.
At least rather. So music is back in your life. I mean, it's always around you, but you're making music again. How come?
Long story short, was doing all the other projects that you mentioned, the books, the photography, the
producing,
White Feather Foundation, the documentary work. And I'd put music on hold, and I came across a box of tapes, about three or four boxes of tapes, which had the reel-to-reels of the first demos I ever made, from Velot, Too Late for Goodbyes, that kind of stuff. And I wondered, there was a couple of hundred tapes, and I wondered what was in here. So I got them cleaned up and made sure that there was actually some material on there, listened to it, and the first song I came up with was Every Little Moment, which is on the album. And it sounded like I'd recorded it last week, and I did it 30 years ago. And so I just put some real drums on it, re-sang the chorus, updated the production a little bit, and that was the beginning of the process, because I was just, it wasn't for a purpose except to see how good I could make these songs sound right now. And one thing led to another, and by the end of sort of 8, 9, 10 songs, to be honest with you, I thought I was just going to do either singles or EPs, because that allows me to do the other work as well. Doing a whole album is a real getting my in the trenches and my heart on my sleeve, and a long, long process for me, which it has been, especially with the pandemic. But, we muddled through it. And at the end of the day, the other thing about the album is that it's really songs from four decades, from the earliest that I started in the industry up until this point in time. So, there were songs written a year or two ago. It took It took a year to mix the album because of the pandemic.
So many questions. Okay.
Yeah, so many answers.
Yeah, I know. Goodness me.
Not enough time.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So you mentioned that you used to play, so I put on some real drums. One of the first things your dad bought you to do with music was a drum machine.
But
one
That's
of the
right.
first, I didn't think, this was in 73, wasn't it? But I didn't think they had drum machines in 1973.
It was, I can't remember. It was the Rhythm 77. It was one of those boxes that had the most bossa nova, the sound. Amber and all that kind of stuff.
Like
really.
You get an organ, maybe.
Yes,
perhaps.
exactly. Right. I don't know what happened to that, but yeah, they were around back then.
What did you think when he bought you that? Did you put it to you straight away? Was he suggesting something?
He had one, and I'd always played around with it.
Right.
And so when I was with him in New York at that particular point in time, that was the time when he was teaching me how to play acoustic guitar. You know, and would rattle
off
a few songs.
How was your dad as a teacher?
I had a vague understanding, you know, of the basic chords on guitar. So I just, it was just nice to play with him, you know, more than anything else. You know, simple old rock and roll songs, really.
Well, while we're there now, let's stay with the name of the album, Jude.
Yes,
okay, your history with Jude and Hey Jude and Hey Jules.
Yes, very good.
I know you've been asked this a lot over the last couple of months.
Just
tell us about all that and tell us why you're sort of squaring the circle now with this album title.
It was taking ownership of it, really. I think we've all been through the mill with the pandemic, some more than others. And there was a lot of looking in the mirror and wondering at the end of the day who I am. You know, am I happy? Am I sad? If I'm sad, how do I change that? So it was, there's a lot of self-reflection. And I felt like I'd gone through the mill and also discovering these old tapes as well. So it was a journey from my musical beginning to now. And also you had a lot of the Beatles stuff going on with Get Back, you know, which was bringing back many, many memories, fondly, I must add. Also, I think I have a small memorabilia collection. So I had the Hey Jude arrangement notes, which I made into an NFT for auction to benefit the White Feather Foundation, my foundation, so that we can get on with doing some more work. And so it just was apparent that I'd come to a point now where I'd kind of shed a lot of the old skin, and I felt this album in particular was the end of a chapter. And, you know, I think you also know that, you know, legally I was called John. Originally, John Charles Julian Lennon. And I'd kind of been, you know, I've had issues with that, with security in airports and, you know, people making comments about that. And after 40 years of it, I was literally sick and tired of being the second John.
Right.
You know, and I wanted to be me, because everybody since year dot, mum and dad included, called me Julian or Jules. So in 2020, I just said, you know what, I want to be me. I'm finally done with this. So by deed poll, went in, changed my name to Julian Charles John Lennon, putting myself first for the first time ever, and being me for the first time ever. So that was a real, you know, weird weight off my shoulder, and to finally be me. And hence, you know, being me, being Julian, being Jules, being Jude, it just all made sense to me.
Great to see you, man.
Yes, likewise.
Okay,
likewise.
Lucky Ones, new single, new album, Jude. It's out now. Great to talk to Julian Lennon. And that is Julian Charles John Lennon. Thank you.
Thank you.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
All morning, all week, all our lives, we've been right here waiting for our next guest. He is the Grammy-winning, 30 million album-selling superstar who's had a number one single in each of the past four decades. His new album, Songwriter, is out now. And here he is with his new single, Same Heartbreak, Different Day, full marks from us for Richard Marx.
Baby, same heartbreak, different day.
Here we are, besties in the house again, as always.
Unbelievable.
There, for School of Rock, see the Stool of Rock. How are you finding the stool?
The stool is excellent.
Yeah, you're happy with the stool?
I've been told, you know, some people have perfect pitch. I've been told I have perfect stool.
Perfect perch. Nice. Richard, great album. So we have a brand new album out, and it's called Songwriter. It's out now. Songwriter, aptly named because he's having fun with the genres, is the songer. So he has five pop songs, he has five rock, five country, and five ballads. So it's like a sort of little mini EP discography. You know, you talked about elegance before. Elegance doesn't necessarily mean easy, or does it? You seem to be so good at this now.
Oh, that's just experience.
Really?
Yeah. If I think that there is elegance in experience sometimes. The days of being nervous, or, you know, I try to explain it to people. I no longer get nervous. I get a little nervous, like for live TV, maybe sometimes, just right. Because not. This is going to sound so cocky. Not because I'm worried about me screwing up, but there's so many
things that can go wrong.
Things that can go
chain
wrong.
Chain of command.
But when it's a gig and I'm backstage and I just can't wait to get out there, the butterflies still happen. But it's not nerves; it's just excitement.
Can't wait to get out there.
Yeah, and even something like this, like I think to myself, this is what I do for a living. I come in and I hang out with nice people and play music and.
And
get beautiful intros that my publicist sends over. It's a pretty good life.
Well, we get an even better deal because we get to be in your company and you come and do all the heavy lifting, and we just sort of frame it, I suppose, is what we do. Talking of touring and gigging, I mean, you're having a fine old time. It's like this is a mini world tour that you're on.
Yeah,
so you've done a lot of Europe already.
Yeah, 24. Last night was my 24th show of this tour.
Okay, and you're tonight Union Chapel again. So three
tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night, so yeah. Sixth. Are we see, yeah, fifth today, sixth tomorrow.
Yeah.
And so lots of Europe already done and dusted. Italy to come, France to come. But then you did in Australia, back in the US. You know, I mean, that is proper globetrotting, isn't it?
It is. But I've never enjoyed it more.
Right.
Because two reasons. One, because my wife, Daisy, really does love being on the road with me.
Right.
And, you know, we met later in life. So we don't have a lot of time to waste. So she travels, even though she's got a career of her own, she travels with me, I'd say, 90% of the time. So as opposed to most of my touring life, I'd come off stage to screaming love and go back to a hotel room by myself.
Interesting.
I come off stage now, and there's my beautiful wife holding a martini saying, we have reservations at this place down the street. It's really fun.
And it's a family affair, isn't it? Because your son nearly made it this morning, but
he did.
He's a son.
He had a few too many last night.
Yeah. When we were young and foolish, we were young and foolish, yeah. But we were having the party, the mother of all parties, which is beautiful. So New Zealand, Australia, you know, your music travels well. It always has done. You're illustrious. Just take us back to writing those jingles for your dad's ad company, because we've never had this chat. So
right.
Tell us about that.
I didn't write any. My father wrote them.
All right. I
sang on them.
I see. Got it.
My father was he started out as a jazz pianist, like phenomenal and very successful in Chicago, where I'm from. And then in the 60s, he started his own jingle company.
Right.
So he wrote music for TV and radio commercials in the heyday of the jingle business, you know. My mother was a big band singer. When they met, she started singing on the jingles. So it was a family business. And then by the time I was 5 or 6, my dad started getting jobs for, like, you know, breakfast cereals and candy bars. And, like, they needed kids to sing these jingles. And I would be home walking around singing Monkees songs very well in tune. And my dad said, I think my kid can actually sing. I'm going to bring him in. Nepotism be damned. And I grew up in the studio, you know, making jingles with my parents.
Oh, my goodness me. That's so fortuitous. Because we all want the best for our kids. And the thing we all want, don't we? And we've got to be careful with too much projection here. You know, and they've got to have their own manifestation about them, regardless of the tenderness of their years. But we all want the best for our kids. And we just all, if we could have one wish for our kids, it would always be, wouldn't it? I hope they find their lane as soon as possible.
Yeah.
They dive into it and they enjoy the water, you know, the temperature, the ambience of the whole thing. I mean, how fortuitous. I mean, you've done all the work as well, but to be surrounded by that magic as a kid.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and to be carrying it on. You know, I lost my mom a year ago, so I'm, you know, now it's just me and my kids. But that I shared this love, not only the actual act of making music, but the love of music with my parents.
Yeah.
And now all three of my sons carrying it on. I work with them. They sing with me. I write songs with them. The new album, my son Luke has produced 3 tracks for me. My son Jesse did another 2. you know, I was joking in the elevator. I was like, I got three sons and not one bloody doctor.
Not yet.
I got all musicians.
Richard, you're awesome. It's great to have you here.
You are, man.
You're always welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, brand new album from Richard Marx, and it's a special album. Four different genres, sort of four mini EPs, five songs in each little sort of discography. You got your rock, your pop, your ballads, and your country. And it's entitled Songwriter. It's out now. Single, Same Heartbreak, Different Day, out now also. And for everything Richard Marx, richardmarx.com.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
All right, we've heard from a bunch of incredible guests already, but still to come. Presenter, journalist and car fanatic Lee McKenzie flicks through her brand new book, Inside F1. Marathon master Hugh Brasher tells us how you can get involved in next year's London Marathon. Creative director of Dulux, Marianne Shillingford, had us wowed and wooed as she revealed this year's Dulux colour of the year. F1's finest David Crofty Croft has us fired up ahead of the Japanese Grand Prix. So let's get right back into it, Vassos. Who is next?
Our next guest's new book, Inside F1, is out on Wednesday, and she is so far inside F1, she's in danger of giving Lewis's car a leak. This is Drive to Survive in book form from a presenter who's always on top form. If fast cars send you into a frenzy, listen up, folks, it's Lee McKenzie!
You nearly said that then.
Yes, nearly.
Hi, Lee.
Good morning.
How are you?
Well, I'm all the better for that introduction. I don't even know where to go from that.
You're great.
Oh, well, thank you.
You are. You're
this
so good
why
at your
I turn
job.
Up to this show.
Oh, my goodness me. You're so good. You're so good. How did you start your job?
So my father was a Fleet Street journalist. I was the annoying child that turned up everywhere. I mean, I was barely at school. I think I'd covered most major sports events by the age of 12. Which meant that my education was not great, but I had a very wide sporting knowledge. And then I suddenly looked around and I thought, people get paid to do this?
I know.
This is incredible.
Go and watch the greatest sporting events in the world from the pound seats.
Exactly.
Yeah, so what was the first most memorable thing you attended?
I attended a lot of rugby when I was younger. And then I was at Wimbledon, at Formula One as well, in the early 90s.
How old?
Mid-90s. I would have been about 11, 10.
Really?
Yes.
And were you doing, like, pretend reports and things like that?
I was, yeah. And then I used to get a Monday morning off school, and I'd go into my local newspaper, the Ayrshire Post, and I'd write up the rugby column and an equestrian column called Horsing Around with Lee McKenzie. That one didn't catch on. And then, yeah, then I went back to school in the afternoon. I think everyone at school hated me because, I mean, who in their right mind leaves school to go into a newspaper to write, you know, to write a report which gets published?
Right, so from print to broadcast. So when did that transition happen and how?
I left university and I was offered a job as for a national newspaper, which was just starting up as a rugby journalist, the head of the rugby department. Of course, there wasn't a rugby department because there was no newspaper. And they guaranteed my salary for 2 years if the newspaper folded. It's still going, actually. But I was so arrogant at that age, I thought, well, newspapers, I've done it. I mean, I'm 19. Of course I've done that by now.
Yeah, I'm an old hack.
So I went into TV because I love writing. And writing for television is very different than writing for newspapers. I always think I'm a journalist who happens to be on TV. I never went into television because I wanted to have my face on a screen. I still think it's quite awkward. I hate watching myself back. I love the job. That's why I do it.
But you're so at ease with it. You know, you old head on young shoulders. You've always had this sort of laconic Des Lynam-esque kind of vibe, you know, which is fine if you're Des Lynam and you're in your 50s or your early 60s. But how do you get to be so relaxed in front of the camera or the microphone?
I think it's the work you do before you get there, right. And you'll all know that. You know, what you do on this show. I was directing that at you, and Chris directed laughter. That is not
all the work he does in preparation for the show.
I see a lot of paper.
Yeah. It's not his, it's from the last person that was sitting at that desk.
So hang on, so Lee, you do some work.
I do.
Before you go on air.
Yes. It'll never catch on.
Blows my mind. Is that possible?
It is possible.
And so, then
what you do is the words that you say on camera are basically like, you know, the pinnacle. It's like the tip of the iceberg, but below the water is all like the hard stuff that's keeping it up there. And, you know, I do the same. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, Wimbledon when I appear on court or Formula One or what I'm doing, rugby. I would also ask every question differently to the person in front of me. That's my responsibility, to know who's going to be there, because sometimes somebody needs a little ego massage. Other drivers or athletes just want you to get, you know, crack on and get on with it. Yeah. But essentially, my job is to facilitate a good answer.
No, yeah, but you always let them know that you know about them and have respect for them in your question.
Yes.
And you always do that.
Well, thank you.
It doesn't go unnoticed, let me tell you. What was the first big event you covered?
Well, actually, I started in news. So I covered things like general elections, the Lockerbie trial. And that was quite important because I remember the plane going down when I was a kid. So to be able to cover that as a court case, I think, was probably quite a cathartic thing. So I started off as a news journalist. I was always told to be a good sports journalist, you had to be a good news journalist, you apply that. That's why I think I can be friendly with some of the drivers, as you see in the book, but also I can also always ask a tough question, because you have to be a little bit distant in those moments. You can't go as if it's, you know, someone's your best friend. You still have a duty and a responsibility to ask a big question.
Once the lines are blurred, they remain blurred, don't
exactly.
they? Exactly. Inside F1, Lee McKenzie, forward by David Coulthard. So you've alluded to who your favourite driver might be. You haven't really given us a nailed on answer. Don't blame you. I would tell me to unask the question. What about your favourite sport?
Well, Formula One is, I hate saying the word easy. I've spent so much time in it. I can drop in on that. I do also love rugby. I've got horses. Horses is my sort of background. I've fallen off all over the world, which means I'm not very good. It would be one of the three. As an event, I do think Wimbledon is the best special. 2 weeks. It's so special to be there. Longest days ever. I also normally have to leave to do Silverstone in between, which kind of breaks the flow. As an event, to go on to Centre Court and be doing those interviews is hugely special.
I know, and also, pretty big tennis shoes to fill, those of Sue Barker's, and you were doing it so eloquently, elegantly and articulately. So congratulations, well done.
Thank you very much.
It's great to see you. You are the best. I literally think you are the best at your job. Inside F1, Michael Schumacher, Lewis Hamilton, Sebastian Vettel, Max Verstappen, Fernando Alonso, Felipe Massa, Jenson Button. Observations, no judgments, Lee McKenzie, with a foreword by David Coulthard. It's out now. Inside F1. Can you sign this for Noah, please?
I will.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Nice to see you.
Thank you very much.
All the best.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
His dad once famously paced Roger Bannister to the first ever sub-4-minute mile. His daughter once paced my daughter to her junior park run PB. And in between, he's in charge of literally the world's greatest race. The London Marathon is humanity at its best, and so is its boss. So a big thank you is due to guess who? Woohoo! It's our Hugh Brasher!
Good morning, Hugh!
Good morning, Chris. Good morning, Vessels. Good morning, the team.
How was it for you?
It was just one of the most joyous occasions. It's just a sea of humanity getting together and being positive. And look, we need positivity in life. That's why I love listening to this show, because it is about positivity. There's so much negativity. There's so much that's going wrong. But that day is honestly one of the most life-affirming days of your life. And I love the fact that Vassos is running around now in a minion suit. This is a man that can run under 3 hours in a marathon. But actually, what he's deciding to do is put on a minion suit and just get in to the fantastic feeling that you get from running 26.2 miles. Who could believe that was possible?
It's so crazy, but everything you're saying is true. Now, I know you haven't had the spectator figures in from DLR yet, but be prepared for those, because I honestly, it was so well attended yesterday. 20 or 30 deep in most places around Cuddesart, 40 and 50 deep at various places. You have the Rainbow Row, which is beautiful. That's a new thing. That was gorgeous. But there was nowhere where there was no one, and I've never seen that before.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems to be people just want to embrace. I think there was something like 73 pubs on the route. 73 pubs have their best day of the year. I mean, come on. Again, it is a celebration. And I think, you know, we've tried to make the back of the pack, the people coming at the end. I was walking with them for the first 3.5 miles yesterday. So it is just trying to be more inclusive, get more people involved. Because again, I just say, get positive. Yeah. Look to something enjoyable. There's an amazing man running yesterday, Anousheh Azhuri, who got locked up in jail in Iran on trumped up charges. And his vision for freedom, his vision was to run the London Marathon. And he did that yesterday. And it is, he was living in a jail with rats, cockroaches. He was being tortured. And he said to me yesterday, he was just looking for this one positive thing in his life. And he thought about the London Marathon. He thought about the freedom. And yesterday he ran it. And I haven't spoken to him today, but just speaking to him yesterday, it was just, again, a joyous thing to be doing.
You're flying, aren't you? So many stories. That's a very special story. But everybody has a story who runs the London Marathon.
That's exactly it. You know, there's some amazing elite athletes and we love them, but it's the stories of everyday people who, whether they're running for a loved one, running to celebrate life, having got through cancer. I spoke to a lady yesterday. She was 51. And the first thing she said to me, I am a cancer survivor.
Yeah.
And that was her positive statement. This is what she's run. She came from Canada. She'd run a PB, but she just wanted to go. What an amazing experience. And my father, when he co-founded this event, he wrote an article in The Observer and he said his final sentence was, does London have the heart and hospitality to welcome the world? And I think it was actually the heart and the soul to welcome the world. And London proved it so many times over.
By the way, good morning to all the other marathons that took place over the weekend and that take place throughout the year. Obviously, we're focusing on this one because Hugh's here and we all ran it yesterday. You know, our gang, between us, we ran between sort of 3 and 6 hours, depending on who you're talking to. And so we were cycling back yesterday from the finish. I jumped on a Boris bike around Pall Mall. And I was cycling past through Trafalgar Square, then I turned right onto Waterloo Bridge, and as I was crossing Waterloo Bridge, I heard this cheering, thinking, what's that? Of course it was still going on, and the cheers were just as loud then as when we were finishing.
Yeah, I mean, the team sent me a photograph of them leaving the finish line last night, and it was 1:15 in the morning. We're trying to open the roads. There's a huge cleanup operation going on. It's just one of those events where there is, across London, various different things going on. You can't see them all at the same time. And it was an amazing day yesterday, but I also loved the kids' mini marathon the day before.
Yeah. We haven't done that yet. We've got to do that next year. And how does that work?
It's basically about getting kids to be able to run through those finish line, to run through that finish line, get an amazing experience. Every child is being paid £10 towards for computer equipment or sports equipment. And we're trying to target schools in London, more disadvantaged schools. Because of what happened in COVID, the massive disparity between those that had and those that didn't have. And how can you try and even that up? So, this is a TCS, a sort of totally involved in this. We want more kids to become on a level playing field. And the mental benefits, there are more children suffering with anxiety. There are more people with anxiety. Running is a positive force for good. That's what we want to create.
Get out of your head by getting into your body. That's the thing, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And then when you revisit your head, there's a lot more space than there was before you started.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Give our love to Chicago and all the other marathons that you are part of and the running communities that you're involved in. If people do enter the ballot, a word to the wise, you please do try and, don't enter the ballot willy-nilly thinking I might run, I might not run. Have an intention to run should you get the place.
Oh, yeah, absolutely have an intention to run, but it can be the first step, because it's then like, do download Couch to 5K.
Yeah.
Start doing a park run. I mean, they're just incredible events. Delighted Sky helped Mary set her PB. And it's just the community that you get there. And it's actually about the coffee and the cake. I mean, come on, everything is about the coffee and the cake.
It was about the cold beers and the curry last night, let me tell you. It's the best beer of the year. The best beer. This is all going to end in beers. That was my favourite sign yesterday.
And it all started with beers. That's where it started, in a pub, the Dysart Arms in 1978. So it starts with a beer, it finishes with a beer. Beard says it all.
Yeah, you don't have to drink beer, but anyway, some of us do and we love it. Thank you, Hugh.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Pepper red and molten yellow and fortune green and blissful blue. Our next guest won't just sing you a rainbow, she'll match your walls to your curtains to that exact shade of dusty banana with a hint of avocado. She's definitely one to swatch, and even now it's cold, she only needs one coat. Please welcome Dulux Creative Director, Marianne Shillingford.
Good morning, Marianne. How are you?
I am very happy.
Well, how's this sound? How does it sound, Vassos? Dame Marianne Shillingford. Ooh. Come on, that's got to
happen. It's got a ring.
All right, so here we are, the colour of the year. Let's get straight on with it. What is your colour of the year, Marianne?
The colour of the year this year is called Wild Wonder.
Right, now tell us about Wild Wonder.
Well, Wild Wonder, the story of... It's a colour story. And the story of colour this year is all about nature.
Yes.
And it's all about reconnecting with nature, because in times of uncertainty, what do? We need to find things that reassure us, the familiar, and nature is always where we go when we're having a bad time. And so bringing some of that nature into our home, this is a biophilic colour. This is a colour that connects us with nature because it's a soft green, but it's also a magical colour because it has a thing called metamerism. Now, metamerism, a metameric colour, is a colour that changes as the light moves across the sky during the day. Metamerism. So this colour starts off looking green, soft, soft green, moves through to the most beautiful golden barley, and then in the evening it becomes a cool gold. And so it's this colour that's never fixed, just like nature. I mean,
how good is
amazing.
That?
It's magic.
That's how she starts.
Magic colour.
Yeah.
Please paint my walls with magic. Thank you.
It's yeah. really magic.
It's
seriously
like Paul McCartney
magic.
Coming on and kicking off with Helter Skelter. I mean, why would you not do that? So this is what a lot of people don't realise. I didn't realise it until I met you, and I love you. You know I love you. I genuinely, genuinely love you. You know that. I've told you before. I actually love you. I love you like you're a member of my family. You sort of are. You're always in our house because you sorted our house out. So what's magical about that is the fact that you can paint your house different colours which meet the day, you know, at the doorstep or on the window frame, and you know it reflects the seasons, you know. It's an echo or a magnification of what's going on in nature, and that helps you with the way you are from the inside out.
Absolutely. Colour is, I mean, we make decisions about colour every single day. Look what you're wearing. All of you guys have put colour on that will make you feel something, either pick you up, calm you down, you know. Every day, it's the most incredible language we all speak. Universally we speak colour, but we don't really investigate it.
No, we don't invest or investigate it enough.
No,
you're wearing green today because obviously, you know, you come in here, we're going to be talking about colour.
Yes.
So that must have been a significant decision this morning.
It was. Green is one of those colours of balance. I am a little bit excitable and I'm prone to a bit of orange and pink. And so green is that colour of ultimate balance. It's right in the middle of the visual spectrum and it balances everything. It works with everything. So I've got some jolly shoes on and I've got an ice green top just to keep me. It doesn't work, by the way, because I am so excited.
That is so interesting because my favourite colours are orange, you know this.
Yes.
My favourite colours are orange, green, yellow, and then purple.
Yeah.
And I love to wear orange, I love to wear green, especially when interviewing people when doing the show, because it does have an effect on the way your guests respond to you. So James Martin famously took on the advice of a colourist for his TV show and started to wear different colour clothes on telly, and his viewing figures went up by 40%. Why might that be? How would that work?
Well, colour, every colour has something. It's a cultural reference. It can have a personal reference to you. So you'll choose a colour for a reason. Now, you're wearing this most amazing, vibrant purple. Now, in kind of colour, what colour means or what that sort of says to us is mysterious, to start off with. It suggests that you are a creative problem solver, but you're also a dreamer. And the colour is very modern. It's one of the most modern colours we can find. So you're hugely modern, you're a creative problem solver, you're a dreamer, and you're quite mysterious.
And
so
also,
today...
My wife looks wonderful in purple. It reminds me of her. Because she looks amazing in all the shades.
Yeah.
But I think she looks best in purple.
It's regal. It's a regal colour. It was the most expensive colour anybody could ever make. It used to be made, it was a Tyrian purple, was a colour that was made by grinding mollusks, a certain marine mollusk, and only the Romans, only the high status people ever wore it. And it was only in the Georgian time that we actually discovered a way of making purple in dye, and it became available to everybody. Until that point, it was the most expensive colour. Nobody could afford it. So it has this amazing modernity. It's royal. Yeah,
oh, I love
Sir
it.
Lord Chris.
All right, so let's just repeat. What is it again? The colour of the year?
The colour of the year is Wild Wonder.
All right, and what do you want Wild Wonder to achieve for people?
I just want it to reconnect them with nature.
Did you create Wild Wonder?
We did.
Okay, how did you do that? How did you go about creating a brand new colour?
Oh, well, we do this thing called a trend forecast every year. So we gather together from all over the world some amazing minds and thought leaders in design, in colour, in fashion, in art, in creativity. And we ask these people, who are independent to us, they're not colour experts. And we ask them, what is happening in the world that's going to affect the way that we live in the future? So what's going to be the big thing? What are we spending our money on? Where are we going on holiday? What are we feeling? What are we worried about? And then we get them together for 3 days. They talk about it. They share their ideas. And then after that 3 days, our teams interpret this sort of story of our lives in palettes of colour that capture what we want and what we need in our homes.
I love it.
So it's about people. It's not about stuff. It's about people.
Once again, Marianne Stewart's colour of the year is Wild Wonder. Check it out. It's a colour that changes as the day unfolds, regardless of what the season, you know, or the time of the day or the time of the year is, because you can paint your house to change colour as the sun rises in the morning and sets in the evening. And that, why wouldn't you want to live in a living space? That's the point, isn't it? Yeah,
absolutely.
You're awesome, Marianne. Anything else you'd like to say to sign off?
Well, I just, yeah, keep colouring in, guys.
And consider, colour is a superpower.
It is a superpower.
That's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whether it's what you wear, whether it's how you look, you know, whether it's like, you know, what you're painting your fence down the, you know, your front door, you never get the second chance to make a first impression.
Yeah.
And things like that. It's so important, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and because I can't really abide a car with a black interior, because it just, I want a fun interior. Do you know what I mean? I want a colourful interior. That's why I love the brand new cars that have a retro joy about them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff.
Colour changes everything, and it just makes life better.
What is your favourite colour?
Orange. I'm an orange.
I'm an orange and green all the way.
Orange
and green all the way down the line. Still getting questions in. You've been listening to Marianne. She works for a very well-known paint company. We've said the name a few times. Her name is Marianne Shillingford, and she is just the best of the best. That's it. We're out of time. Marianne, we love you.
Yeah, we do.
Deeply.
Yeah. If tell us where they're going to build the temple, and we're queuing up to worship at the altar.
Yep.
It's as simple as that. Goodbye, everyone.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
He's big in Japan tonight with a gig in Japan tonight. He'll be on the mic as Max Verstappen bids to wrap up the world title in the Japanese Grand Prix live on Sky Sports F1 from 3:30 a.m. tomorrow morning. And who needs softly, softly when you've got Crofty Crofty?
Good morning, David.
Good morning, good afternoon. How are we all?
Very well. Now, Crofty, we know that even when you're on long calls, sometimes you nip back to Bedfordshire in between. You were in Singapore last weekend. You're in Japan now. Has Bedfordshire seen any sign of you in between?
It certainly hasn't. There's a very nice golf course in Singapore. Well, there's several. So we decided we'd go play golf instead.
Got it.
It was much more preferable.
Got it. Now, because we were running that there London Marathon on Sunday, I heard of many things that took place in Singapore, but I still haven't seen any of the highlights because I haven't had time to catch up. Can you get me up to speed, please?
All right. Firstly, do you know who won? Because I don't want to spoil it for
you. Yes, no, Sergio Perez. And I'm very pleased for him, because I really like him.
I'll give you a Sergio Perez stat in a moment, because it was written in the stars on Sunday night. It rained a lot. The race was mainly won in the wet. Lewis Hamilton had a couple of boo-boos in the race, and he finished a bit low down. Max Verstappen didn't get away very well. He finished low down too. And it was left to Sergio Perez and Charles Leclerc to scrap it out in the end. Leclerc gave it everything. Perez held on. And let me give you this. Sergio Perez is in his 11th season in Formula One. The name Sergio Perez has 11 letters. It's 11 years since someone won Monaco and Singapore in the same season. He drives car number 11. He came out of garage number 11 and he crossed the line to take the checkered flag at 11:11:11 Singapore time.
Get out of here.
It's true, I tell you. Some things are meant to be.
Who comes up with those stats, Crofty?
Well, this was someone called Formula Kimmich on Twitter that I saw. So I'll give them full credit for this one. I don't know how anyone works that one out. I was too busy screaming Sergio Perez wins.
Yeah, because you can craft stats to a story, can't you? But you can't craft that one. That is literally written in the stars.
No, that is absolute fate. And I wish I'd have thought about it before the race. But he did brilliantly. There were so many safety cars and virtual safety cars and so much action going on. He was as calm as you like, led from start to finish, took the lead at the first corner. And that was good for Sergio Perez. He's played the supporting role to Max all season long. He'll do it this weekend, I think, as well. But he deserves his moment in the spotlight.
So Nicholas Latifi will be no more, at least for next season, we're hearing now.
Yeah, it's a real shame, actually. Latifi not happy. He had a bit of a crash with Joe Guanyu. Thought that it would be nice of the stewards that had heard his side of the story before they gave him a five-place grid penalty for this weekend's race. And I think it was inevitable that Williams and Nicholas were going to part company. It hasn't been brilliant for him or for the team this season. I'm talking to him today. He says he has no idea what he's going to do next year, where he's going to go, but it won't be Formula One. As far as I know it, there's only one seat up for grabs now, and that's at Haas. And that's either Nico Hülkenberg or Mick Schumacher getting that one. And Alpine and AlphaTauri will announce their new drivers for next season sometime over the course of this weekend.
All right.
Can't tell you who.
Is there any chance, because we're hearing lots of whispers about this, of Roger Federer actually joining you in the commentary box next... Oh, sorry, that's tennis. Right, okay. Back to F1 and Japan. Often, we've had the rainiest races ever at Suzuka. You've been better in a speedboat than a Formula One car. And rain potentially forecast for the weekend, which will make it all very exciting.
Yeah, last time we came here, we had a typhoon rolling in, so everything got abandoned on the Saturday, and we had qualifying Sunday, and then the race. There is rain coming tomorrow. Tomorrow's going to be very wet. Saturday a bit drier, and the last forecast I saw, there was a bit of rain around on Sunday as well. And we don't need rain here at Suzuka. It's one of the great tracks that we visit during the course of the season. I absolutely love this place. Only figure of eight track that we run at in Formula One. There are corners that bite here. If you go off, there's no long runoff areas. There's lots of gravel. There's lots of walls that are really close. And if you have a mistake, it's going to cost you dear. But all eyes on Max Verstappen. He will be world champion if he wins the race and gets the fastest lap this weekend, which means that he could potentially get that fastest lap on the last lap of the race and for the second year running, win a world title on the last lap of a race, although it won't be quite so controversial, I don't think, or as dramatic as we had in Abu Dhabi last year.
Now, he streets ahead. Of course, he is Max Verstappen in the world championship table. And he could have won in Singapore last weekend. He could win in Japan this year, clinch the title, that is, not just win the race. Mm-hmm. I wonder what the odds of him not winning the world championship are, because he didn't win it last week in Singapore. And he's got Japan, USA, Mexico, Brazil and Abu Dhabi to go. I mean, it's more than odds on that he will. But he might. He might not, everyone. Stay tuned.
Yeah, I can look up the odds if you wish to see. Oh, no, I can't because no, I'm in Japan. It won't let me on the website.
Don't worry. It's okay. Did you see?
He's not going to miss out.
All right. Did you see the missile flying overhead a couple of days ago?
We did look out the plane window just in case.
That's a bit worrying, isn't it?
I reassured Paul de Resta that we would be flying higher than the missile was, so we'll be okay on that one.
Right.
It is a bit worrying, but they're all going north, not a bit further south where we are.
Okay. Crofty, thank heaven, not going south ever, because he's the finest F1 commentator on the planet. David Croft, Japanese Grand Prix. Practice starts tomorrow. It's 3:30 a.m. on Sky Sports F1 if you want to catch it. The race live Sunday morning, 4:30 a.m. repeated from 9 o'clock and throughout the day on Sunday too. That's David Croft representing the Sky Sports F1 team. And this is the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast. And you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.